ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 26, King Kodanjana goes to the forest to hunt.
Anuninye
Atha
Sanakai
Viro
Anunaya
Govidaha
Pasparsha
Pada
Yugalam
Aha
Chotsanga
Lalitam
Anunenyetas
Shanakai
Viro
Nunayako
Vidaha
Pasparsha
Pada Yugalam
Ahachot Sangalalitam
Anuninyeta
Shanakai
Viro
Nunayako
Vidaha
Pasparsha
Pada
Yugalam
Ahachot
Sangalalitam
Anuninyeta
Shanakai
Viro
Nunayako
Vidaha
Pasparsha
Pada Yugalam
Ahachot
Sangalalitam.
Anunineta
Sanakai
Viro
Nunayako
Vidaha began to flatter.
Atta,
thus,
Shanakai,
gradually,
Viraha,
the hero,
Anunayako
Vidaha,
one
who is very expert in flattery,
Pasparsha,
touched,
Padayugalam,
both the feet.
Aha,
he said,
cha,
also,
with
sangha,
on
his lap,
lalitam,
thus being embraced.
Srila
Prabhupada's translation and purport.
Because
the king was very expert in flattery,
he
began to pacify his queen very slowly First he touched her 2 feet, then embraced her nicely, seating her on his lap, and began to speak as follows. Purport. One has to awaken his Krishna consciousness by first regretting his past deeds. Just as King Kuranjana began to flatter his queen, one should, by deliberate consideration, raise himself to the platform of Krishna consciousness. To attain such an end, one must touch the lotus feet of the spiritual master. Krishna consciousness cannot be achieved by self-endeavor. One must therefore approach a self-realized Krishna conscious person and touch his feet. Prahlad Maharaj therefore said, One cannot come to the precincts of Krishna consciousness unless he touches the dust of the lotus feet of a person who has become a Mahatma, a great devotee. This is the beginning of the surrendering process. Lord Krishna wants everyone to surrender unto him, and this surrendering process begins when one touches the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. By sincerely rendering service to a bona fide spiritual master, one begins his spiritual life in Krishna consciousness. Touching the lotus feet of a spiritual master means giving up one's false prestige and unnecessarily puffed up position in the material world. Those who remain in the darkness of material existence due to their falsely prestigious positions, so-called scientists and philosophers, are actually atheists. They do not know the ultimate cause of everything. Although bewildered, they are not ready to surrender themselves to the lotus feet of a person who knows things in their proper perspective. In other words, one cannot arouse Krishna consciousness simply by his own mental speculation. One must surrender to a bona fide spiritual master. Unless only this process will help one. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manubhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Darati Svaparantikam Nama Sreshtam Anumapi Sachi Putra Matra Sarupam Rupam Tasya Grajam Rupadim Motit Maturim Gostabritim Radha Kunda Girivara Maho Radhika Madhavasam Praptoya Sapatita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tam Natosi Anuninyeta Shanakai Viro Nunaya Kovidaha Pasparsha Parayugalam Ahachot Sangalalitam. Because the king was very expert in flattery, he began to pacify his queen very slowly. First he touched her 2 feet, then embraced her nicely. Seating her on his lap, he began to speak as follows. So today, can everybody hear? Yeah? At the back, you can hear? Yeah. Today we're going to delve into two very explicit teachings of Srila Prabhupada, of the Acharyas, throughout the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and in our Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta. That is the importance of a regretful mood, remorsefulness, or As Prabhupada says, a prerequisite of being humility and freedom from false prestige. That is one point that we're going to discuss. The concept or the idea of regret in Krishna consciousness. And we're also going to look at this, what it means to take the dust of the lotus feet of the spiritual master, the surrendering process. What it means to surrender to Krishna, or to surrender to the spiritual master. And first of all, I'd like to share with you a definition of technology that Srila Prabhupada gave to the devotees. And finally, I'd like to recall the first Kuli Mela, which didn't happen in 19, you know, whenever. It didn't happen 20 or 30 years ago, the first Kuli Mela in Los Angeles. But I want to recall for you and get to this point of the very, very first Kuli Mela in history that took place in Dwarka Dham many years ago. So, first of all, technology. Suhotra Prabhu had asked Srila Prabhupada, his first question that he asked Srila Prabhupada in a darshan. They were curious, the devotees were curious about technology, Vedic technology, because being Westerners, we're very proud of our technological achievements, technological advancement, scientific advancements. And so he asked Srila Prabhupada, what was the Vedic technology? In the Bhagavatam, in Ramayana, and Mahabharata, it talks about palaces, that, you know, many multi-story palaces and beautifully designed lakes and roadways and cities. So what was it? There must have been some form of technology. There must have been some kind of something they used to excavate and something they used to plan cities and build buildings, etc. The devotees were perplexed. And Prabhupada said the Vedic technology was parampara. And so Sahasra Prabhu, he was thinking, maybe Prabhupada didn't understand the question. The Vedic technology is parampara. Maybe he thought, I asked something else. And so he repeated his question, and Prabhupada said, the Vedic technology is guru parampara. And Prabhupada gave a very brilliant definition of technology, a definition of technology that's used by cutting-edge educators in the 21st century. The subject of technology is a very popular subject, as you know, in universities, in schools, secondary and primary schools throughout the world. One of the fastest growing industries in India is the education industry. Two industries, health and education. If you want to make money, you open up a hospital or you open up a school, an educational institution. And in the educational institution, you should teach technology or you'll go out of business pretty quickly. So technology is a very big thing. Or an MBA. This technology, Prabhupada said, people are fascinated by technology because it helps to solve problems. That's what technology is. It's an application of scientific knowledge, technology. We solve problems of inconvenience, we solve problems of heat, and we design a machine that will relieve us from the suffering condition of heat. We design an air conditioner or a reverse or a fan. We started off with a hand fan, Vyanjanam, a fan from a yak tail or a peacock fan. And then some different cultures have very exotic types of fans that they use with different forms of bamboo and different things like that. So that is a technology, a very simple technology, a sustainable technology for becoming relieved from the inconvenience of weather, of the heat. And then we designed technology to become relieved from the inconvenience of extreme cold, freezing cold conditions. Or we designed technology to help us to overcome the inconvenience of lack of communication. So telecommunications. We design all sorts of sophisticated forms of communicating. Prabhupada said in one lecture, maybe even in the future they'll design a technique where they can communicate with Vaikuntha. They'll be able to call Vaikuntha Loka by their sophisticated means. So that is what technology is. Technology is, it's an application of science to help us to overcome problems of life, the problems that we face. But Prabhupada said the ultimate problem in life is the problem of birth, death, disease and old age. And there are no scientists on the planet that can solve that problem. There's no technology on the planet that can solve that problem to date or historically. The only technology that's available to solve the problem of birth, death, disease and old age is the Guru Parampara. Guru Parampara can solve that problem once and for all, Prabhupada said. And so that is the ultimate technology. And he left it at that. And the devotees didn't ask again what is the Vedic technology, because that's a good enough response. It's the solution to the ultimate problem. Our ultimate problem of life is birth, death, disease and old age. And it's not heat and cold or communication or transportation or any other form of inconvenience. The ultimate problem of life is birth, death, disease and old age. So that's my introduction to this purport today, Śrīla Prabhupāda's beautiful purport, where Śrīla Prabhupāda, he's referring to two very, the other day at Chincha Chaitanya Prabhu, he mentioned Jayadvaita Swami's rule of thumb, that if something, if we're going to validify something within our ISKCON circle, then it should be something that's explicitly stated in Śrīla Prabhupāda's books, in Śrīla Prabhupāda's purports, in his commentaries, in his lectures. It should be explicit, it should be repeated more than once, more than twice, if we really want to establish this as a principle for application in Krishna consciousness in the international society for Krishna consciousness. It should be explicit in Prabhupada's teachings. That was the first criteria, and the second one was that it was before 1977. That if it happened, if it was practiced before 1977 and it was explicitly mentioned by Śrīla Prabhupāda, then it's got high level, high status criteria for being valid. Anyway, these two points are very valid. Regret in Krishna consciousness. Yesterday, His Holiness Jayapataka Swami Maharaj, he very beautifully referred to this pastime of Mrigari the hunter, to illustrate the importance of regret. And how Mrigari the hunter, Maharaj was presenting this in terms of inspiration, inspiring the congregational members of our Namahattas, one of our Bhakti Briksha groups, to preach Krishna consciousness from whatever level they're at, from whatever platform of their realization that they spread Krishna consciousness, they share Krishna consciousness with the conditioned souls, because that will benefit everybody. And he mentioned that Narada Muni, he's our ultimate preacher, he's our role model, he's the archetypical preacher for the Bhakti Briksha, the archetypical preacher of Krishna consciousness. He's our ultimate role model. And if it wasn't for his endeavor, Mrigari the hunter would keep half killing animals for his own pleasure, for his own satisfaction. But he told him to stop doing this half-killing business and fully kill them. And then Mrigari was wondering why he asked him to fully kill the animals. So he gave him a context to explain to him the consequences of killing animals, the karma that's involved in killing animals, of taking the life of another living entity. And if you remember yesterday, a devotee asked Maharaj, what happens if we kill mosquitoes and rats? Will they be waiting for us at the time of death? And Maharaj said, with open arms. They'll be waiting for us with open arms. So, we are not, everybody is under the same laws of nature. Magari, the hunter, or somebody who's chanting Hare Krishna, we all come under the same laws in one sense. So he was regretful. Magari got the news, he got the information, he got the knowledge of the karmic reaction of his activities, and he regretted his past deeds and inquired submissively from his guru. This is the Pratiprat Praniprashnena and Sevaya, what to do. And so his spiritual master enlightened him. That's one example, Magari the hunter. Throughout the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many, many examples. And throughout the Gaudiya Vaishnav history, our Vaishnava saints, Narottam Das Thakur, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the six Goswamis, the literature and the poetry and the songs are full of devotees offering this heartfelt remorsefulness or regret for their past deeds to teach us the position. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ultimate story of regret, Srila Prabhupada really elaborates on Ajamil's mentality. When Ajamil was enlightened by the Vishnu Dutas, first of all, when he was shocked by the Yama Dutas, and then he was enlightened by the association of the Vishnu Dutas, Ajamil, he very much regretted his past position, his past condition, and he came out of this slumber, and he was thinking, was this a dream? Did I go through this in a dream, that these horrific personalities came to me and were dragging my soul out of my body? And were these Vishnu Dutas a dream? Was this a dream to save me from my wretched condition? And he came to his external consciousness and he understood that he had been blessed by the agents, the Dutas of Lord Vishnu, by the Lord's devotees. This Lava Matra Saru Sangha Sava Siddhi Hoy. He received perfection by this association of the Lord's devotees. And he was feeling very grateful for that intervention of the Vishnu Dutas. Extremely grateful. As grateful as we should feel for the intervention of the spiritual master and the devotees who saved us from a wretched condition. All of us. And Prabhupada said it's a healthy condition to remember, to cast our mind back a while before we came in contact with Krishna consciousness. Whether we're from a Brahmana family or from a Vaishnava family or from a wretched Yavana Malecha family from all parts of the world. So long as we weren't in Krishna consciousness, our future was very precarious. Our future was uncertain because of our lack of connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead to varying degrees. So Prabhupada, this is a healthy condition. Ajamil regretted his situation very much. He left his elderly parents who were dependent upon him. As the eldest son, Ajamil left them. He abandoned them for his own sense gratification. And he became a debauchee. We know the story from the sixth canto of Bhagavatam. He became a great debauchee. And then he had the good fortune, Prabhupada says, of calling his son, his last son, Narayan, because of past pious activities. Because of his past devotional activities, Krishna from within the heart inspired him to name his child Narayan. And he named his child Narayan. And this was his saving grace, literally his saving grace, that he called his son Narayan. And Prabhupada said in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we make this mandatory at initiation, that when we become initiated, we take a different name. We take a name of the Lord, a servant of the Lord, so that at the time of death, we might remember our own name at least. If we remember our own name at the time of death, we can become liberated if we just say our name. And this helps us also to become free from our previous association with our previous lives before we became Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said, this is a standard of pure devotion to develop this regretful mood, remorsefulness, what I've done is a terrible thing. But not to wallow in our remorsefulness, in our shame, not to stay there. Because unless we do something about it, that regret will have very little effect on our Krishna consciousness. Just to feel shamed, just to feel that we did the wrong thing, just to feel remorse is not enough. We have to do something in Krishna consciousness, action in Krishna consciousness. The proud Vedic Brahmanas who refused to give prasadam to the cowherd boys for Krishna and Balaram, they cursed themselves. They were regretful. They cursed themselves for their high birth. Dik jama, dik vratam, dik bahu gyatam. They were cursing themselves for their great learning, for their great potential for performing austerities, for their high birth, for their birth, their third birth as Vedic Brahmanas. They were cursing themselves. They felt what a terrible position they put themselves in. They couldn't reciprocate with the Supreme Lord. It was terrible for them. They were sincerely feeling regretful that they couldn't serve Krishna, and that their wives were so prepared to spontaneously offer everything that they had for the satisfaction of Krishna and Balaram in the forest of Vrindavan. So this regret of the proud Vedic Brahmanas wasn't sufficient. Because the last shloka in that chapter says that out of fear of King Kamsa, they didn't go to Vrindavan. They didn't go to see Krishna. The proud Brahmanas, they were doing yajna to go to the heavenly planets. They're living between Mathura and Vrindavan, halfway between Mathura and Vrindavan, performing yajna to go to the heavenly planets. And then they had this realization that they messed up, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they should offer everything to Him. They cursed themselves, they're in a regretful position, but still out of fear of Kamsa, they didn't go to serve Krishna. They didn't go to Vrindavan. So it's more than regret. That's the point here. That Arjuna was able to regret his position and engage in devotional service and advance in devotional service. It says he went to Hardwar to meditate on the Supreme Lord and to achieve a higher destination. And Prabhupada says in that purport where Arjuna goes to Hardwar that we don't have a center in Hardwar. In Rishikesh, we don't have a center of Krishna consciousness, but we have a center in Vrindavan and in Navadvip. We have a center. And he said, this Chaitanya Chandradoya temple, in the sixth canto, he said, the Chaitanya Chandradoya temple offers a wonderful opportunity for association of devotees. And that one should go there and take full advantage of this opportunity to associate with the devotees in the Chaitanya Chandradoya temple. And to complete their successful progress in their Krishna consciousness in developing our attachment for Krishna. So regret is not enough. We have to perform devotional activities. We need the association of the devotees. We need to hear and chant about the glories and activities of the Supreme Personality of God, Godhead. So many places it said that's the regret. It's a very explicit statement of Prabhupada, a very explicit teaching of the Vaishnavacharyas, that we have to develop this, as Prabhupada said, as a standard of pure devotion. But having regretted our condition, we have to engage in bhakti. We have to perform devotional service. And that's the next part here. Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Prahlad Maharaj, from the seventh canto. And it's also a very similar verse in the fifth canto of Jadabharata to Rahugana Maharaj. He says, Mahiyasam Pada Rajo Bishekam. And in the fifth canto, he says, Vina Mahatpada Rajo Bishekam. Same teaching. And it's in many, many places that unless, in the second canto also, unless we smear our bodies with the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, we can't be successful in our devotional life. So what does it mean? Here Śrīla Prabhupāda gives us a hint, or he's quite explicit. What does it mean to take the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas? Prabhupāda says, that to take the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas is to surrender themselves to the lotus feet of a person who knows things in the proper perspective. It's part of the surrendering process. And Prabhupada, every single word, phrase that Prabhupada chooses to use in his explanation and clarification of the points is very, very profound. And this proper perspective has a Sanskrit meaning. In the Sanskrit, in the teachings of Kapiladev, he uses this word, proper perspective. And Prabhupada uses it in many places also. That we surrender to the lotus feet of somebody who has a proper perspective on reality. It means paripashyatu dashana. Pashati means to see. So, pashati is many, many places in Gita, to see. He sees. But a paripashyati means somebody who sees with a particular type of a vision, a particular perspective. That seeing vision has a perspective of a devotee. Prakritim cha hatojasam. The material energy is not influencing, not filtering the vision. The material energy has withdrawn its influence so that the devotee is able to see things in a proper perspective by knowledge and by detachment. Jnana vaidagyena. By these two things, we get a proper perspective on how to see things for what they are in proper connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the surrendering process. This is the taking the dust of the lotus feet, according to Srila Prabhupada. In the second canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful string of verses that describe the transformation of heart. In the second canto, you'll see the third chapter of the second canto, Prabhupada calls it devotional service, a change of heart. The pure devotional service, a change of heart. That's Prabhupada's subtitle for that chapter. Now, if you see in the 10th canto commentaries, the chapter title is called the Devatas, called the Demigods. The third chapter of the second canto of the second canto is called Devatas. Prabhupada titles the chapter Pure Devotional Service. So how does Prabhupada get pure devotional service out of the Devatas? Pure devotional service, the hint here is a change of heart. What is the change of heart? So at the beginning of this chapter, the third chapter of the second canto, one of my favorite chapters in the Bhagavatam. At the beginning, there is about 10 verses. And Sukadeva Goswami is saying, if you want this, brahmavachasa kamastu, yajeta paramanapatim, indriya kamastu, if you want this, you do this. If you want to have good health, then worship the sun god. If you want to have strength and fame, worship Lord Shiva. If you want to have good progeny, worship the Prajapatis. If you want to have a good son, worship Mother Aditi. If you want to have a good sex life, worship Lord Indra. He's giving long list, right? 9 verses, what to do. The Devata, worshipping the Devas. To get strength, to get long life, to get health, to get virility, to achieve these material facilities. Then we worship the demigods. But then, a famous verse, 2.3.10, that many of us know, akama savakama va, moksha kama udarati. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajata purushantaram. That no matter whether you have all these desires or you don't have any desire, just worship Krishna. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Focus your attention on Krishna and everything will be fulfilled. All your desires will be satisfied. And then the Shaunaka Rishi starts to speak on behalf of the sages at Naimisharanya. And he speaks about Parikshit Maharaj and Sukadeva Goswami. The combination of these, the powerful combination of this Mahabhagavata Raja, Savai Pandavo Raja, Maharaj Parikshit. He's a powerful Kshatriya king, but he's a sadhu. He's a great devotee. Savai Bhagavato Raja Pandaveyo Maharataha. He's a great Maharati, but he's a great devotee as well. And Shaunaka Rishi is saying, when you get the combination of this great devotee king, Kshatriya, with Sukadeva Goswami, who's fully realized soul, then the conversation, the nectar that comes from this dialogue between these two great souls must be very beneficial for everybody. So Shaunaka Rishi, he's revealing to Suta Goswami his understanding of the situation, that you've heard this conversation, so please share this conversation with the assembled sages in Naimisharanya for our benefit and for your benefit. Whoever hears this conversation will be benefited for sure. And there Shaunaka Rishi himself, he explains the potency of taking the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas and how much effect that has on the consciousness and how it transforms the consciousness. And this is the transformation, the change of heart. The dust of the lotus feet of the devotees transforms the heart of the conditioned soul from material consciousness to spiritual consciousness. In the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful phrase Prabhupada calls the saffron dust particles of mercy that from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When the spiritual master speaks, when Sukadeva Goswami is speaking the Hari Katha to Prakshit Maharaj for seven continuous days, his speech is transcendentally powerful, Prabhupada says. It has the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because his words have been touched by the saffron dust particles of mercy of the lotus feet of the Lord. And therefore, the words are not mundane sound vibration. They're transcendental vibration. And they have the potency to affect change in the heart. They have the potency to take the conditioned soul from darkness, tamasi ma jyoti gama, from the darkness of ignorance to the light of transcendental knowledge. This is, and so Shaunaka Rishi, he quotes this famous verse, jiva, that unless shavo jivan jivangrire num, unless you take the dust of the lotus feet of the, unless you bathe your body in the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas, then your body is considered to be a dead body. And unless you've smelt the aroma of the tulsi leaves at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu, you're also considered to be a dead body in this string of verses. And there he gives us the hint how to use this body to transform our consciousness by the mercy, through the mercy of the spiritual master. He says, unless we use the ears for hearing about the transcendental glories and pastimes and activities of the Lord, the ears are like the holes of a snake. Yesterday we saw a snake here in Mayapur. I mean, not a little snake. We saw like a snake you might see in a zoo or something like that. One of the big snakes like this. Down the back, I'm staying in the Vaishnava Academy. And I went down behind the academy and I saw the end of the snake like this. And the body was round, like reptilian and very like, phew. I mean, I'm from Australia, we have snakes, but we have a death adder like this size. It can kill you. Death adder. But he's little and he's got a triangular head. But this thing could wrap you up. Look like a big, big snake, you know. My heart was jumping like this. And I ran up my stairs. Locked the door. And I looked over. Every time I kept looking over the balcony now. Where is that snake? The next time I looked over, I saw two little squirrels there. I saw these two little squirrels playing around there. I thought, oh, that's all right, you know. It's safe. A squirrel can't do anything. But this python looked like he could eat me. Anyway, so the ears are like the snake holes. When I first read this verse, I thought, the snake doesn't have ears. Does the snake have ears? What is it? The ears of a snake. But it's the hole for where the snake lives in a hole. That hole, nobody wants to go there. Prabhupada said no one goes in the hole of a snake. It's dangerous. So the holes, the ears that don't hear the stories and pastimes of Urukrama, the fascinating stories of Krishna, they're like the holes of a snake. And the eyes that don't see the beautiful form of the Lord, they're like the eyes painted on the plume of the peacock feather. are useless. Prabhupada says in this purport that if you want to, he says that when the deity is decorated profusely, in a clean and sanctified temple, this will surely infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration to see the beautiful, the profusely decorated form of the Lord will surely infuse the mundane mind with spiritual inspiration. To see the form of the Lord will inspire the devotees to change our consciousness, to change from matter to spirit, asat to sat. Pure devotional service, a change in consciousness, and it was brought about by the connection with the spiritual master. By the mercy, by those saffron dust particles that touch the lotus feet of the Lord. And that's the formula for success in our Krishna consciousness. I said I'd like to finish with a retelling of the first ever Kuli Mela. The first ever Kuli Mela was not in Los Angeles. It wasn't in France. It wasn't in the UK or at New Govardhan. The first Kuli Mela was in Dwarka. And it was an occasion when, many thousands of years ago, when Sudama, friend of Krishna, he was encouraged by his wife to go back and meet his old Gurukuli friend, Krishna, because they were having difficulty, right? Sudama was very emaciated. It's said in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam that his veins were sticking through his skin. He was wearing torn, means he was very thin. You could see his veins. He was the personification of Vata. Right? He was just veins and bones and skin. And his dress was very, very disheveled. He was wearing torn cloth and old. And he took his gift to Dwarka, and he goes to see Krishna. And Krishna, he's thinking all the while on the way to Vrindavan that he won't get to see Krishna. How can he go to see Krishna? He says that he is a Paham Daridra Papiyam. Well, who am I? I'm a poor person. I'm a sinner, a sinful person. Who is Krishna? Kwa Krishna, Shini Ketanaha. Krishna is the master of the goddess of fortune. He owns everything. How can I see Krishna? He's thinking like this. And then it's beautifully described by Prabhupada that he just walked through, he walked through the entrances in Dwarka, and nobody batted an eyelid. He just walked through with other brahmanas, and the brahmanas, they have this potency to go anywhere. Nobody's going to interfere with the brahmanas. So he went through three different stations, encampments of soldiers protecting the Dwarka, the palaces of Dwarka. And we hear that the first palace that he came to was the palace of Rukmini. And Krishna saw his friend from a distance, and he got down from his bed and he embraced him and he bathed him with his tears, his friend. And Rukmini thought this was unusual, because this brahmana, he's not like a Paka South Indian looking brahmana. This brahmana, he's very, very, he's got old clothing on, he looks very poor, and he looks neglected. He's not even looking clean, his cloth doesn't look clean, doesn't look suchi. And Krishna, the prince, the lord of Dwarka, he's embraced him and he's bathing him, and then he placed him on his bed and he washed his feet, and he took the water from washing his feet and he sprinkled it on the members of his family, on himself and on his family members, and he offered him arti, various lamps. He didn't just quickly offer a lamp. Sometimes we want to do quick arti, dup arti, and then get to the prasadam. Right? He did big arti. He offered one lamp, camphor lamp, and then he offered panchadipa, and then he offered another lamp. It says a variety of lamps he offered. And he offered all sorts of scents to Sudama, and he was glorifying Sudama. And he offered him some nice sweets and sweet words. And he offered him a cow. He gave him full reception, big reception to the Sudama. And Rukmini was shocked by reception, but she doesn't question her Lord. She's fanning him. She took up the fan and started doing service to this Brahman. She doesn't even know who he is. And she's fanning him because Krishna's making so much attention to this, his old Gurupali friend. And then they start to engage in this discussion. Krishna asks him, what happened when you left the Gurukul? That's what happens at Kuli Mela, right? Everybody asks, what happened? Did you get married? Have you got kids? Are you going, what temple are you associated with? That's Kuli Mela, right? That's the Katha. So Krishna did the same thing. Where's your wife? She's a nice wife. She looks after you. Doesn't look like her too much. He was asking questions like this, thinking that perhaps he didn't get a very good wife. But he wanted to make sure. He wanted to make sure. It said that this is a Vedic question. One's vana should be understood. Ashram should be understood, sorry. He wanted to make sure he's in properly situated. And so, yeah, he said, yeah, I got a nice wife. She looks after me nicely and we're nicely situated. And Krishna's thinking all the time, I know why Sudama has come here. I know why he came to my palace. But he's not going to ask. He's too humble. He's looking down all the time. He won't look at me in the face. He's looking down at my feet. And so Krishna is saying, what is this you brought for me? I can see you brought a gift. What did you bring? He said, I didn't bring anything. Don't mind what that is. It's just a bag of nothing. So Krishna grabbed this bag and it said that the cloth of the bag was ripped. It wasn't clean. It wasn't a clean cloth and it was ripped. It had a hole in it and the flat rice came out of the bag. And Krishna took the flat rice. And he started to eat this gift. And he was chastising Sudama, thinking why he was being such a miser and he wouldn't give him this gift. He's brought a gift, but he wouldn't give it to him. He wouldn't share him this gift. And Sudama was feeling terrible that he's eating this flat rice. It's not fit for the Lord. He's the Shri Krishna Krishna Saka Vrishni Vishabhava Nidruk Vajanya Vangsa Dahanana Vapaga Vidya. He's the controller of Dwarka Dham, of the Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty. He can't eat flat rice from this poor Brahmana. This is the wrong thing to do. And Rukmini was also thinking, what's going to happen if he takes two morsels of this flat rice? Many explanations the acharyas give, but one of them is that she was thinking, this flat rice is so rough and coarse, it's going to mess up his insides. He's used to eating very delicate dishes of the royal palace. He doesn't eat this raw flat rice. So they're having this dilemma, this transcendental dilemma between all the devotees there. And Krishna's relishing all the time this rasa, this exchange with his devotees. And then Sudama just says, all right, that's it. I'm not going to ask anything from my Lord. But Krishna said, you remember when we were out that night in the Gurukula? It was the middle of winter. In winter time, in Ujjain, it never rains. Like now it's rainy season. If it rains, it's like, of course it rains. It's rainy season. But in winter, it never rains. Unseasonal rain and torrential downpour, thunderstorms, lightning. You remember that time when we were out collecting wood for the spiritual master for Sandipani Muni. And then we were trapped. We couldn't do anything. And we were wandering around all night holding on to the wood for the sacrificial fire. And then the spiritual master, he found us in the morning time. When the rain stopped, the spiritual master came out with the disciples and he found Krishna and Sudama. And he was so satisfied with the devotion, with the determination, it said, with the determination and dedication of Sudama and Krishna. And he says that these Tushtoham, I'm very happy with you boys, Dvija Shrestha, you're the best of the Brahmanas. He gave him a blessing. Satya Santu Manorataha, whatever your desires are, let that be fulfilled. Let all your desires be fulfilled. And the next part of his blessing that he got from the lotus feet of the spiritual master by satisfying the spiritual master is very, very important for us in Krishna consciousness. Chandamsa yatta yamani. He says, let the teachings of the Vedas be ever fresh. Let those teachings of the Vedic literature stay in your mind forever. Chandamsa yatta yamani. And in the commentary it says that yatayamani means food that's been cooked more than 3 hours. In Ayurveda it says food that's more than 3 hours old, you don't eat it. It doesn't have any taste. The taste has gone from the food after 3 hours. But Sandipani Muni is blessing his disciples, ayatayamani, that for eternity, bhavatiha paratracha, in this lifetime and forever, that the teaching, the taste of the Veda will be fresh. Parandrishva nivatata, you always have that fresh taste of the Vedic literatures, of the instructions of the spiritual master, because he pleases the spiritual master. They receive this message. And it's interesting that this blessing is connected with the introduction to this chapter, to this story of Sudama Vipra. And there it said at the beginning that Parikshit Maharaj is encouraging Sukadeva Goswami to speak more. This is chapter, we're like in chapter 80 of the 10th canto. He's heard a lot of Leela of Krishna. He's saying, speak more, speak more. I want to hear more about Krishna. Mukundasya Satkataha, the eternal pastime of Mukunda. I want to hear, I can't stop hearing. Srota Michchami, hey Prabhu, Sukadeva Goswami, I want to hear this pastime. And so it said then, he said, Sukadeva Goswami says, this is what you say is correct. That one who vidametta visheshagya vishana kama magana, one who understands the distinction between matter and spirit, one who can discriminate in this material world, wants to hear about Krishna. And vishana kama magana, one who is completely disgusted with the path of material sense gratification, kama magana. When we're disgusted with the path of material sense gratification, we want to hear about Krishna. That's all we want to hear. In the purport after the Vina Mahat Padarojo Bishekam, in the 5th canto, Prabhupada says, what is the definition of the Niskinchana, of those who have no material desires? The definition is they're not interested in hearing about politics and sociology. The definition, Prabhupada says in the purport, they want to hear about the pastimes and activities of Mukunda, Mukundasya Satkata, to hear about the eternal pastimes and activities of the Lord. And that's the blessing. That's the blessing that we get from the saffron dust particles that have touched the lotus feet of the Lord, that we develop a taste for hearing more and more about Krishna, and less about sociology and politics, because Prabhupada said, that will go on. Whether we know about it or not, that's going to go on for eternity. So I'll finish. That was the history of the first Kuli Mela in history in Dwarkadam, and the blessings that the devotees got, Krishna and Sudama got. And I finish with a prayer by Lord Brahma for meditation. And it very much ties together this regretful, remorseful mood that we have to cultivate once we come in contact with the dust of the lotus feet of the spiritual master and Krishna consciousness. Atapi te deva padam bujo dvaya prashada leshanu grihita evihi janati tatvam bhagavan mahimno achanya mekopi chidan vichinvam. Lord Brahma says in a very, very shameful mood that he tried to interfere with the pastimes of Krishna and Rajadhan. He tried to take away the devotees from Krishna. This is a big offense. And he's thinking, how can I become free from this offense? I can't become free from this offense. And he gives a string of beautiful prayers and verses in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. And here he says that unless we get a little bit of mercy, prasada lesha anugrihita evihi, of the lotus feet of the Lord, we can't be successful in this life. We can go on speculating in so many ways, but we'll never reach the tip of the toenails of the lotus feet of the Lord through our speculation, through our charity, through our austerities. Dik vratam, dik kulam, dik bahu gyatam. The proud Vedic Brahmanas, they're regretting. But Lord Brahma understands that we regret and we pray for the mercy to come back as a blade of grass in Rajadhan, so that the devotees will stamp on my head and will get the dust of the lotus feet. And that's the surrendering process, the dust of the lotus feet of the Vaishnavas. Any questions or comments? Prabhuji.
Thank you. Somehow your class put many questions in my mind, but I'll just ask one. You mentioned prasadam, or no, you just mentioned food in general, presumably offered food. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, that it is tasteful, tasty. So for 3 hours, and that you specifically said that it doesn't have any taste after 3 hours. I think Bhagavad Gita says that you shouldn't eat it after 3 hours. But, yes, I mean, does that apply just for non-offered food? Because, practically speaking, we are in the habit of honoring prasadam that is often much more than 3 hours cooked. It can be 6 hours, it can even be the day before. In my experience, that prasadam is still very tasty. And also, in the Mahaprasadam stalls, they sell prasad from the day before very often, cakes that are more than 3 hours. So how do we understand this statement that it no longer has any taste? Does it mean that we are in complete illusion that it doesn't have any taste, but somehow we're in illusion that it does? Please enlighten me on that.
Thank you, Vasudeva. I did mention that it was an Ayurvedic, it's a quote from the Acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and it's an Ayurvedic quote that we shouldn't eat food that is 3 hours old. And you have rightly said that we take prasadam that is more than 3 hours old. In Chaitanya Leela, there's the Raghava Thali, Raghava Pandit's condiments that he bought for Lord Chaitanya, they were months old, that Lord Chaitanya was eating this prasadam that was brought from the village of Raghava Pandit. Was very, very old. And in Melbourne Temple, they have a very famous restaurant called Crossroads Vegetarian. It's a food for life distribution restaurant, cheap restaurant, in the middle of the city opposite the Melbourne Town Hall. And many people come there, maybe 500 people a day have prasadam there at this restaurant. And one of the favorite items they cook all the prasadam in the temple, and they take it into the city and they distribute it from the Bay Marie. And one of the famous items there is a mixture of the prasadam that comes from the leftovers from the breakfast in the temple. They put the khichdi and the maha and the pakoras and everything, and they mix it up and they put it there. And everybody in the line, they want to eat this food. What is in this tray? I want this one. We don't want all this fresh looking one like this. We want this one, it's all messed up, it's got nice taste, but it's old prasadam. And they're not devotees, they don't know what it is. They think it's some special delicacy, but it's khichdi and pakoras and sweet rice, everything mixed up together. So yeah, definitely prasadam holds the potency of that prasadam is that it's ayatayamani, it's got the blessing of the Lord, so it's got the Lord's quality of being. I mean, there's a limit, of course, with food. It can start to grow things after a while, but before, it's got some taste.
What was the positive service that the Smarta Brahmanas did after regretting their offense against the Lord, having failed to serve Him?
That the proud Brahmanas, they didn't do anything. The proud, it's the understanding is that the proud Vedic Brahmanas, they had this regretful mood, they had the right idea, but they didn't have the right action, so they maintained their fear of Kamsa in Mathura, and that means they were still on the bodily platform. So they're back to their swaha, they're back to their yagya, back to where they started. Otherwise, their wives spontaneously serve Krishna, and they considered their wives their guru, they considered their wives their spiritual master, but they personally didn't achieve the same destination. Would you? Yeah, good. So the difference between regret or feeling remorse that will lift us and transform us, or a shame that will humiliate us perhaps and make us feel depressed and not inspired to develop our Krishna consciousness. That's an important, there's a subtle distinction there, but the bottom line is that we feel like Jagan and Madai, they were feeling very remorseful that they were such sinners, and they kept approaching Lord Chaitanya, and he said, all right, you're being forgiven, you don't have to keep, you know, coming for begging forgiveness, you got forgiven, just make a ghat and offer some service to the Vaishnavas, do some service. So that's a nice example of the proper kind of perspective of our remorsefulness, that it's not something that we dwell on for the next, you know, 10 years, but we're remorseful and we seek out service. So long as we have that right attitude that we came from a bad situation, we're being rescued here, and what can I do to maintain, this is what Prabhupada says in the sixth canto, what can I do to maintain my good fortune of being saved by Krishna consciousness? And that is Panchanga Bhakti. That is, we have to connect with the transcendental inspiration of the deity worship, of the Vaishnava Sangha, of chanting of the holy name of the Lord, of taking the shelter of the holy dharma, and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Prabhupada says, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we become disinclined to hear about material activities which keep us bound in the material world. At the beginning of the chapter in the Krishna book, where I think it's Chinavata, Yena Yena Avatarina, Pariksit Maharaj wants to hear about more and more of these pastimes of Krishna. And he says it's very pleasing to the mind and to the intelligence to hear about Krishna. And it says there that three things happen. One develops attachment, one develops the inclination toward devotional service, attachment for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and friendship, sakyam, with devotees. And Prabhupada translates this in his translation word for word, which is a very long translation for one word, sakyam. Friendship with the devotees that give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. That's his translation. A mundane scholar can't translate like that, but Prabhupada's giving an ecstatic translation. That this is that by hearing about Krishna consciousness, by hearing that Krishna kicked the cart with his feet and he showed his foot potency, his foot shakti with his feet, with his little feet, mididu angri hatam, his soft little feet smashed the cart, the shakatasura, or with his hand potency on Trinavata, or with his mouth potency on Putana, or with his unlimited potency with Mother Yashoda is revealing the universal form. Then when the devotees hear this, yani yani yagitani tabala charitaniva, they think, that's what we want. We need that Krishna consciousness. We need to hear about Krishna. Smarantitanya gayataha. When we do that, we can remember Krishna, Prabhupada says. And then we're not interested so much in what's happening with the BJP or with the sociologist or with the scientists, because we've got satisfaction. When you get satisfied with the essence of knowledge, Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam Ishyate, then there's no taste for nanyat yadya pratikvachit. You don't have a taste to hear from the magazine, from the all these crazy magazines and newspapers and whatever they are, in hard copy or soft copy format. But we relish to hear about Krishna. Last one.
That we read stories of Krishna and so forth, it helps us, like you said, you know, very much. I personally think that the fastest ways that you go on Harinam, because then you give something to others too. If you are at home and you read yourself, it works. But if you're really deep in depression or this and that, if you go out of to Harinam, it's just amazing. And unfortunately, many forget about this in our movement. But that's really amazing. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Mataji. In Bhagavatam, it says, Madhurena Samapiyat, we should finish on a sweet note. Harinam Sankirtan Ki. Chira Prabhupada Ki. Gaurabhimanandi.